Hello and welcome to It's Your Money, reminding you right out of the gate that if you have a financial question for today's speakers, you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that number 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can also email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. You can call or text our studio line right now, though, if you have a question at 651-461-9226. Now, here is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor Bruce Helmer, and Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Hello, Peg Webb. Susie, Peg and I today, we always have a, or almost always have a topic in mind in advance. And today we are still going to get to our topic. We're going to talk about practicing financial wellness. But Peg, I don't think we can not talk about the attempted assassination on former president and current candidate Donald Trump yesterday, at least from the context that I know investors are going to want to know what's going to happen when the market opens on Monday. What is it? What does an assassination attempt or any, you know, dramatic event, what is this going to do to the global markets? What do investors need to know? Your thoughts? I don't think we can not talk about it, Peg.
Yeah. I'm still kind of in shock. I'm disappointed in just in general, the politics of this whole year, and I'm not saying that I'm pro one side or the other, just that I feel like it's just been so contentious. But when it comes to something like this happening, I still feel like I'm a little bit in shock. This is the world that we live in, but there's so many more questions than answers right now, and we've gone through things like this before. Bruce, we're old enough that we've had circumstances where it would affect the markets. And I feel like as much as I've read this morning on the markets and what the trend might be, we don't really know because the market is an anticipatory mechanism as a whole. Even when we're investing for our long term, people like to talk about the short term and the current events that happen. But I remind people, you know, my clients right away that, you know, maybe it is a good time to revisit, you know, how much exposure that you have to the stock market if this actually really, you feel like this is going to affect you. But time and time again, events like this tend to, we get on the backside of it. And so the people that are nervous right now are people that maybe aren't as confident in the allocation that they have, you know, to growth and what is that going to do to their fixed income. So my suggestion is, you know, just wait. Let's see America's, you know, greatest companies are going to persevere and I feel like do well in the future. So I would just suggest, Bruce and Susie, that people don't make a knee-jerk reaction here because of this event. Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, I think that's really good advice. And I agree with you. You know, and it's not just this year. This attitude in the country seems to have been growing for years to me, and we've become a society, not to pontificate too much on things, but we'll tie it back to personal finance. But we just seem angrier than ever before, whether it's driving and road rage and somebody giving me the finger up their car window or the shootings and the hate speech on both sides. You know, we can disagree politically, but we're still all Americans. We still all want what's best for our family, what's best for our country. We might not agree on the best path to get there, but that doesn't make somebody that disagrees with me my enemy. And yet that's where I feel like we've become. And that leads to, you know, crazy things like what happened yesterday. But the big thing, Peg, I think you hit the nail on the head. there might be some short-term market reaction, but we've seen this before, right? We've seen assassinations, we've seen wars, we've seen September 11th, we've seen, you know, January 6th. We've seen a lot of things where investors say, oh my gosh, the market's going to crash. And we say we've seen this before, and they go, oh no, this time it's different. But markets tend to be very resilient over a long period of time. And again, like you said, let's remember what we're actually investing in. We talk about the market as this sort of nebulous thing that you can't get your arms around. But what we're really investing in is stocks. We're buying equity, presumably in smart, innovative, well-run companies that will increase in value over time. So I agree with you. I don't think investors should get too nervous. We should all, you know, say prayers and well wishes for the Trump family and our country and hope nothing like this happens again and hope that the rhetoric, you know, tones down. But in terms of what I should do as an investor or what I should do in my 401k, never a bad idea to review. Maybe sometimes it takes a dramatic event in the world to draw your attention to it, but don't do any knee-jerk reaction. Don't do anything that's going to deviate from your long-term strategy if your long-term strategy indeed made sense. So now as a segue, it actually is a pretty good segue, we want Peg today to talk about practicing financial wellness. And what do we mean by financial wellness? And certainly how we invest for the short term, midterm, and long term is part of what we want to talk about today. So let's segue into our topic, Peg, practicing financial wellness.
Yeah, so financial wellness is basically financial security, the freedom to have choices. And actually, I would say that in America, too. I mean, look at us today. Sometimes the freedom of choice presents struggle for people, because if you have a lot of opportunity, then then it could be that that you feel overwhelmed. And so people do feel overwhelmed when it comes to financial wellness, because, you know, we've all also included now in financial wellness, you know, just the general well-being of people and their life satisfaction. The best part of my job is sitting with people and talking about their life and their aspirations and what their vision is for the future. You know, but wellness here, we talk a lot about the psychology of well-being right now, and just, you know, are people happy? Do they feel like, you know, they have what they need to have? I mean, with social media and all the things that come at us today, I feel for people when it comes to financial wellness, because people kind of want to measure, where am I? And I see a lot of stress about money. Not that that's new, but I think today you're kind of measuring yourself against a lot of other people based on the fact that we have such a wealth and plethora of information in front of us. So then the last part of being, you know, with financial wellness is just your physical health. So we're educating people more and more about maintaining your health, you know, having a good diet, exercise. Health is wealth. And I don't know, you know, we get these outlines from our marketing team, but one of the statements that I've made for decades of time is health is wealth, but health comes first. Who cares how much money you have if you don't have your health, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that last point, because I was going to go there and you beat me to it. I've had clients before, Peg, that on paper financially look great. And when they start to have health struggles, it just doesn't matter how much money they have. And sometimes these health issues are things that they're actually going to overcome, and they know they're going to overcome them. But while they're going through it, they're depressed and they're down and they're sad. And that impacts everything else, including personal finance. And so we have tried to make this connection before between financial wellness and physical and, you know, personal healthy wellness. And I got to say this, you know, listeners that don't know what I look like, if you did know what I look like, you might look at me and say, what are you doing talking about financial well-being? You know, you're overweight. What do you know about it? Why don't you stick to money? And I've got high blood pressure and I've got high cholesterol. But having said all that, contrary to what you might think if you look at me, I do exercise religiously. I walk 4 to 5 times a week, 3 to 5 miles a walk. I lift weights twice a week. I have an annual physical. I go see my doctor every year. I have an annual dermatologist appointment. I have all my vaccinations. I've been vaccinated for COVID, pneumococcal pneumonia, shingles. So I do take health seriously, despite my appearance. And I think listeners have to take it seriously because, Peg, you said it perfectly. If you don't have your health, you don't have anything, no matter how much money you have. So these things are related. Your personal well-being, your happiness, your attitude, your fitness, both physically and financially, this stuff all relates together. And if we've made that point, and I think we did, let's talk about specific things then of what people can or should be doing or not be doing in terms of achieving this financial and physical well-being.
Yeah, Bruce, we've talked a lot on this show about financial literacy. And literacy is just encompassing of a range of skills, you know, the ability to save, the ability to budget, understand investing and how much debt you should take on. But the biggest, this is Peg Webb talking now. If you don't have a list of financial goals, you know, if you don't have them written down, if you're not looking at them often, you can definitely go down a path that pulls you away from what you really, you know, your mind is a wonderful thing, but it isn't in the fact that it will take you to a negative side very quickly. So you have to be very strong, and financial goals will help you do that. So I often say on this show, I have this, the word SMART, right? S-M-A-R-T. And that's because you can't just say, hey, I have this goal of, you know, saving $5,000 this year. You know, I hope I do it. No, you have to be very specific. Like, how much are you going to save per month? How much are you going to build upon your, you know, future wealth plan? And unless you're specific, it's just going to go by the wayside because our environment just pulls us into a direction of spending, and we've seen all these things that we want. Secondly, the M stands for measurable. So you want to be able to measure your progress. The A is for achievable. You know, give yourself gold stars if you do something, even the smallest things. And now I'm talking, Bruce, about this kind of the psychology of people. You have to make sure they're relevant and reasonable. Because I've seen people come to me and say, hey, these are my goals, but I mean, this is like climbing Mount Everest. It's just too hard without having the baby step. And then you also need a measure of time. When are you going to, you know, when are you going to achieve these things? And I mentioned a gold star, but a gold star is something like even when we were little, Bruce, and we were in kindergarten, we always got the stickers. And they still give the kids stickers today. I see that. And it's a reward for something that's not easy. I mean, I think sometimes we talk on this show about, well, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's not easy. And the only other thing I would add here is, you know, find some way of educating yourself about finances. My big rant, and then I'll hand it over to Bruce, but my big rant still is that we don't brainwash our children, you know, when they're like 5, 6 years old about money and the power of compounding. Because I feel like if we could just ingrain that in our children, and I'm not saying the school systems have to take the full responsibility, parents have to too, but I think they could work together to make our society more literate when it comes to finances. Bruce?
Yeah, a couple quick thoughts to add to that. In terms of goal setting, and I'm really glad you went there, Peg, I don't know how anyone that does what we do can advise a client without knowing what that client's trying to achieve. If you're not shooting at a specific target, what are you aiming at? I every introductory meeting, I talk to people about, if you engage our services, what's a win? How do we satisfy? How do we deliver what you're looking for? What are your goals? What are your objectives? And oftentimes, Peg, and I've said this before on the show, people know and they can articulate it, which is great. Oftentimes they don't know. And then I think it's our job to help them determine. Ask them, you know, more leading questions. What age do you want to retire? What does your life look like when you retire? Do you want to leave a legacy for children and grandchildren? Do you want a snowbird in the winter? And we help them, identify goals and articulate that. And then it's easier for us to give advice to achieve those goals and objectives. And to financial education, you're absolutely right, Peg. I think sometimes, I don't know if you're guilty of this, but I know I am. I assume there's certain things that I know that I assume everybody knows. It's just common knowledge. And then I get out and I talk to people or I work with potential clients and I find out, I guess this isn't common knowledge. I guess other people don't know these things that I just take for granted. So you're right. People need to be better educated financially. They need to set goals and they need to make this, I think, a priority in their life. So after that, what are some other specific talking points, some specific advice that we can give to people? And I don't think we're going to cover all this in the first half of the show, Peg. We might have to go over in the second half also. But what's next on your list?
Yeah, well, just a simple thing to do is to create a net worth statement. Write down all the assets that you own. Don't forget that your house is an asset. You know, stocks, bonds, cash, personal possessions. Some people have gold coins and some people have other things, art or something that's valuable. But you have to write it down. I'm a firm believer that you can't just walk around with things not, you know, written down. And create the spreadsheet, know where you stand, and see what your household net worth is. And then if you are a couple where someone else is equal with you making decisions, you should do it together. Or at least one can do it and then review what was written down on the net worth statement with the other. The one that's harder, Bruce, I think, is tracking your spending. Who in the world wants to have a budget? Nobody. I mean, it's just all these things are just pulling us and encouraging us to go buy this and buy that. Your life is going to be happier if you, you know, do this. Well, you need to create a budget, though, and you need to have some type of tracking application on your phone or something that would keep you on track. But that's a tough one. And then looking through, once you have that list of what you're spending on, is it all necessary? The number one thing that I see today is what people are paying for all of these movie stations, like the Netflix and the Showtime and all these, you know, they all, and now they used to be kind of in a package. And now it's like, well, if you like this movie, then you have to pay $3.99 for it. They're very quick to be able to pull more money from you. So it's so important that you write down what you're spending on, because I would say most people that are listening today could probably cut out some of what they're spending and imagine investing that and then having that financial wellness or that security, which actually will change people's lives. Bruce?
Peg, that is so smart and so good. So what you really just said, create a net worth statement. What do I have? What do I owe? I think everybody should be able to figure that out, but I know a lot of people listening right now haven't done that. And then you talked about tracking your spending, which sounds boring and nobody wants to do that. And then you talked about reducing unnecessary spending, which you can't do unless you track and know what you're spending money on. And most people, when they do that, will be surprised to learn how much is going to certain things that they now realize is wasteful spending. But if you bring that all back to goals and objectives, it makes the whole exercise more doable, because what's more important, having that premium champ TV station or retiring 1 year sooner with more money? I mean, you put it in perspective and bring it back to what's really important to you. So we've got about a little over a minute left. Other key point we want to hit this half of the show, Peg?
Well, I think you and I talk a lot about this, is you have to hide money from yourself. Because if you get it in your hands or you see it in your checking account, there's just so many things that you could buy. So hiding money from yourself within your work plan. If a corporation is going to pull money out before they give you the net amount after taxes in your checking account, most people don't even think about it. It's an automatic thing that happens, and you don't miss the money because you didn't even physically have it in your hands or you can't see it on your checking account. So then wealth is built by hiding money from yourself. Bruce?
Yeah, I call it the propensity to consume. We all feel pressure to spend money when we have access to money. Some people are worse at that than others. Some people are better, but we all have it to some extent. So hiding money from yourself to save and invest for your future, great advice. Susie, let's do this. Peg and I have a couple more key pieces of advice for people to help practice financial wellness, but it won't take up the whole second half. And in the second half, listeners can ask questions.
All right,
Susie?
Thank you so much. And again, if you're listening right now and you do have a question, you can call 651-461-9226. Again, it is 651-461-9226. You can use that number to call or text, and we'll do that right after this on It's Your Money. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. Here is, once again, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer, and senior vice president and financial advisor, Peg Webb. Welcome back to both of you. We're talking about financial health. And we do have a number of people wanting to ask questions, Bruce, just to let you know, at 651-461-9226.
Thank you, Susie Jones. We'll get the listeners as quickly as we can. If you joined us late, listeners, Peg and I have been talking about, as Susie said, financial wellness or financial health. But we did start the show talking about the big news story that former president and current candidate Donald Trump, there was an assassination attempt, as I think everybody listening now probably knows. But people are nervous or worried or wondering about how it's going to impact the markets, how it's going to impact your investments, your 401k, your IRA, and so forth. Peg and I don't know how the markets will react when they open on Monday or what they'll do this week. Nobody knows what will happen in the short term. But we remain confident that markets over the long term are resilient, and you're investing in smart, innovative, well-run companies that go up over time. So for long-term money, I'm not suggesting anybody make any changes or react knee-jerk to this. There might be some short-term impact because it is a dramatic, traumatic story. But for most people, we're probably going to recommend you stay the course. And then in terms of financial wellness that we've been talking about, we talked about setting goals. That's the starting point. What do you want to achieve? What do you want? When do you want it? And Peg always talks about how you go about setting those goals. She uses the acronym SMART. She does that so well. So we talked about that. Then we started to get into some specifics in terms of increasing or enhancing your financial literacy, creating a net worth statement, tracking your spending, and reducing unnecessary spending. And then, Peg, the last thing we talked about, again, you explain it so well, hiding money from yourself. What else do we want to make sure we hit on and information we share with listeners before we let them drive the show with their questions? Peg?
Yeah, there's only a couple few other ones is, looking at your bills and trying to reduce the higher interest rate ones first. So a lot of times you'll get a statement in the mail and they'll say, here's the minimum payment. And I would look at, yes, paying the minimum payment. But if you have a few extra dollars and it's a higher interest rate, go ahead and send more to that particular bill. The other one is setting up an emergency fund. Now, financial planning 101 says you should have 6 months worth of living expenses. That's hard for people. I think it's also good if you have, let's say, 3 months and then you have a ready reserve or you have some kind of a line of credit to be able to access that in a very short period of time. The other one that's big is that checking your credit report. I actually just did this recently for myself, and I had three retail cards. Bruce, you're going to be shocked that I had three retail cards, you know, that I had only purchased like maybe one thing because they enticed me. They say, hey, if you open this card, we'll give you so much more off of this merchandise. Oh, sounds great. Well, I completely forgot that I have three of them out there, so I'm making calls right now, just closing those. And then we didn't talk about your portfolio. We did in relation to the Trump news, but, you know, always monitor your asset allocation. Are you comfortable with the stocks and the growth side versus the fixed income side versus the cash side? And I don't want you to make changes based on current events. Always look a little bit further out, you know, than the day to day, because that will drive you crazy. There's always something negative in the news every single day. They do throw in some positives. The other thing, Bruce, and this is my last point, is if you can't do it alone, there's no shame in getting help, right? Reach out to your great uncle if you feel like, how did they get so successful? Asking questions of people is not something that you should feel bad about. It is something I feel like the smartest people are the people that are not afraid to approach people and say, well, how did you do this? What happened to that? Tell me about this. People are so willing to help you. And then lastly, if you can't find anybody, I mean, I'm a big believer in hiring somebody to help you, a financial advisor. They have, you know, so much knowledge. And once they get their arms around you, you get tailored advice to yourself. And I find, Bruce, that when people do hire people, they take it so much more seriously than people that are trying to do it on their own, only because we're emotional creatures, right? If we lose money, you know, we tend to want to make a change right then and there. What an advisor does is basically kind of hides money from yourself, you know, not having an easy access to be able to do a trade and maybe it's not a good one in your, you know, not a good trade for you to do based on your emotions. Bruce?
Peg, that's all good stuff. You hit a lot of things in a very short period of time. And just really, really quickly, I want to emphasize some of these things because I think they're key. So I'm going to kind of repeat what I just heard you say. I heard you say pay off bills. And that's, you know, again, gets back to our frequent topic on the show where we talk about efficient versus inefficient debt. And inefficient debt can be one of the worst eroders of your financial health and well-being as anything. High interest, non-deductible debt, pay it off. That's probably more important to do that before you even try to do saving and investing. Peg, you mentioned an emergency fund or a rainy day fund. Most people don't have enough money saved. There's statistics out that if somebody gets a curveball thrown at them, their air conditioning goes out or something happens to their car, they don't have the cash to pay for it. They have to put it on a credit card. And then when the invoice comes, they can't pay the balance. Now they're paying interest on living. And so setting up that rainy day fund is important. Most people haven't done that. You mentioned checking your credit. I'll give people specific information how to do that. If you don't know how to do that, you can go to annualcreditreport.com, and all one word, no spaces, annualcreditreport.com, or there's a toll-free number, 1-877-322-8228. That's 1-877-322-8228 if you want to check your credit. And again, credit score matters because it can help determine the terms and conditions on borrowing. If you do need to borrow money, if you have a strong credit rating, you maybe get more favorable interest rates. better terms and conditions. So find things. Most people, Peg, like you said, are surprised. They check that credit report and they have lines of credit open, which can lower their credit rating, and they might not even remember they have them. So again, annualcreditreport.com. Review your portfolio, rebalance, check, make sure you're invested where you want to be. And the key point, and then I'll throw it back to you, Susie, for listeners' questions, hiring a financial advisor. And again, I know every time, Peg, that we say that, there's somebody listening that's cynical that says, well, you guys want people to hire a financial advisor because you want them to hire you. It's self-serving. And the truth is, don't take our word for it. Research it. There's any number of ways that you can research online and find out that statistically, it's not Peg's in my opinion, it is a statistical fact that people that work with a financial advisor do better than those that don't. It's proven. Many independent people have done the research on this. This is not our opinion. So you can research this. Don't take our word for it. But if you believe that, if that's true, then why do the vast majority of people not work with a financial advisor? And they don't. And to your point, Peg, which I thought was brilliant and is not part of the outline, asking other successful people, how did you do this? What did you do? I think that's so smart. And people are willing to share. But again, we sort of have been coached that we can't talk about money, that talking about money is taboo. And it's okay to ask questions from somebody that might know something that you don't. I don't think it replaces your need for an advisor, but I think it's brilliant. And again, you think of people that are financially successful, whether it's Warren Buffett or whoever your hero is, and did they ask questions of others? Do they do this all by themselves? Does Warren Buffett has a team of advisors? He doesn't make all these decisions unilaterally by himself. He's a smart guy, but he engages a lot of other people and asks a lot of questions. Financially successful people have advisors, have other people that they rely on. So should you. So, Susie, I didn't mean to repeat everything Peg just said. I just wanted to emphasize a couple of those wonderful points, but let's let listeners drive us the rest of the way.
All right, 651-461-9226. We've got a couple of good ones here. My wife is retired. I plan to work for 3 more years till the age of 65. Is it advantageous to file taxes separately for the purpose of Roth conversions for her? Bruce, Peg?
Wow, Peg, this is a good one. And you know, the idea of, do you file married jointly? Do you file individually? How do you get the most efficient tax situation, pay the least amount of taxes legally? I don't think it's that simple. I think there's probably a lot more variables that need to be known, right, Peg? Or what are your thoughts?
Well, what I can tell you is never, ever in my career has it worked out numbers-wise. There's two reasons here. One, from a tax standpoint, like you independently do your own taxes, which just means you're on the single percentages versus the married filing jointly. I've not seen that work. And then secondly, there is a legal component to this, where there's other legal things that you have to follow that you basically, they're just saying you can't do it. So here's what I tell my clients. If you have a tax preparer, go ahead, have them have it prepared and show you the numbers, but yet then you have to notify your legal team because they actually will tell you you probably can't do it. Bruce?
I also can't think of a situation where it was advantageous to file individually. The exception to that I've seen a couple of times in my career is if one of the married partners, someone in the partnership has severe health issues and they know they're going to have some sort of an extended stay in some sort of a healthcare facility, then that might be an example where separating and filing independently or individually might benefit. But I think the key point there, Peg, was unless you do your own taxes, and I know a lot of listeners probably do, but if you have a professional tax preparer, they probably do that analysis automatically without you even asking. They probably run the numbers as though you file individually versus filing jointly, and then they file the tax return the way it's the most efficient. So if you have a professional preparer, they've probably already done that research. If you're doing it yourself, again, it's a little harder and a little trickier, but I think almost 100% of the time, people will find that you're better off filing the return married, filing jointly. Susie?
651-461-9226. A texter writes in this morning, I'm planning to gift my home to a nephew. Are there tax implications involved in that?
Wow. So, Peg, gifting, and maybe we want to elaborate a little bit and talk about gifting in general, how much you can gift, why the lifetime gift exclusion versus annual gift exclusion. But this is a unique question from the standpoint that it's not an investment. It's not a retirement account. It's not a brokerage account. It's a home. It's a real estate. And it's not a child or a grandchild. It's a nephew. Does that complicate things, Peg?
Yeah. So whenever we're talking about gifts to other people, then you follow the estate planning rules and regulations. So Every one of us has the privilege of giving away $18,000 to anyone and everyone that we want per year. So I could give $18,000 to my brother, $18,000 to my sister. I could go on and on and on. And the reason that they come up with that dollar amount is that's the dollar amount that you do not have to report to the IRS on any type of form if you stay within that $18,000. Now, I highly recommend that you keep track of it somewhere and you write it down, because you could get audited, you know, when you pass away. The biggest kind of biggest tax return that you'll ever have is when you pass away. So what the federal government says is we each have this allowance, if you will, and we each have 13,000,061 today that we can die with without having to pay a state tax. That's E-S-T-A-T-E, a state tax, when you die. So what happens in this case is the value of the house is probably more than $18,000, but we all can gift while we're alive, and we can actually do that up to the $13.6 million. And all we have to do is fill out a form at tax time to alert the IRS that we've used part of our 13.61 to gift this house to your nephew. So let's just say the house is worth $250,000. You give it to the nephew. You might have a basis in that house of $100,000. The nephew is going to carry the difference between the $100,000 and the $250,000. They're going to have to keep that basis going because no one's paid that yet. So then you fill out this form for the IRS, and that's it. You don't have any outlay of money to do that gift at this time. So that's kind of interesting, Bruce, because most people don't realize that really you can give a lot away during your lifetime. And why would people do that? Well, a lot of times if you're wealthy and you're over the 13.61, and a couple is double that, then you might want to give away things before you die, because the estate tax is, somewhere around 30% of everything over the $26 million is going to go to the government. So people do a lot of planning ahead of time while they're alive. Bruce?
Peg, that was really good. The only thing I want to add is, based on that answer and based on a lot of people's thinking, they want to do this giving or gifting while they're alive, and there's logical reasons to do it, but you also cannot lose sight of the fact that if I have a highly appreciated asset and I give that away while I'm alive, there might be some extra unnecessary taxes as compared to if I leave that to somebody. Let's say it's my kids. Let's disregard the nephew issue, but I have a highly appreciated asset and I want to give it to my kids while I'm alive. There might be taxes to me or my kids that are in excess of what they would have to pay if I gifted that asset upon my death, because upon death, there's a step up in basis to the next generation. Their basis is not the same as mine. So there's a lot of things to consider in gifting. And I think sometimes people that want to gift for some logical reasons might lose sight of the fact that they might be losing the opportunity for somebody to receive that step up in basis. Susie, we have time for at least one more.
All right. We had one that asked, and I wonder if we can get to this. What are the three top mistakes that you find retired clients make? Maybe just,
boy, Peg, can you quantify three? Can you quantify three, or what's the first things you think of?
Well, I was kind of thinking of, how do you get in a position for retirement? Like you don't start saving early. I think a lot of retired people come to us and they might have started saving 5 years ago versus, 35 years ago. So I'd say number one would be they didn't start early enough. The second one is when you retire, I think your emotions are heightened. And they're heightened because you don't have this paycheck coming in every single month. And so I feel like we have to talk people out of a ledge more times than not when you're retired. But when you're working and that money just keeps coming, you're calmer. So that's another one. And then when people retire, they kind of want to get more conservative than they have to. And I always say, Bruce, look at managing your income through your age that you're going to leave this earth versus your retirement date. So that would be a mistake. A lot of people want to get too conservative too soon when they retire. So, Bruce, those are mine.
All right. That's a good one, Peg.
Well, the first thing it is a good one. And Susie, I don't know if we're going to have time for another one. I want to elaborate. Peg, as you were giving your answer, the last thing you said was get too conservative too fast. And that was the first thing I thought of. So I'm thinking, well, if Peg doesn't say that, I am. But then you did. But I want to just add really quickly, when people retire and they don't want to take any what they call risk, meaning money in the stock market where their account value can depreciate, I remind them that there's more than one type of risk. They think of risk, of principal. When I think of risk, I think of the risk of running out of money before you die. So if your rate of return is too low and your net worth is shrinking every year because the earnings on your investments are not keeping up with your spending, and you're going to run out of money before you die, that to me is a much greater risk than some short-term risk on my principal. So most people still need exposure to the stock market even after they retire. It might be less than it was, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But I don't. But I agree with you, Peg. Most people want to get too conservative too fast, eliminate all investment risk, and then their rate of return is going to be too low and they'll run out of money before they die. So that was the first one I thought of. And Susie, I know we're about out of time.
All right. It is time to wrap it up here, as Bruce just said. And if you are listening and you did not get your question answered, you are welcome to email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, or anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE.